From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzek Rolat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. Earlier this week, several Oklahoma lawmakers urged the United States not to intervene in Syria's civil war. Rebecca Cruz and I discussed tonight's anti-war rally at the state capitol.
So it is this question, a moral obligation to help save human lives? But on the other hand, are we willing to send soldiers, American lives, to go and protect these individuals?
And later, I'll talk with Rajdeep Singh. He says there are a lot of loopholes in federal and state civil rights laws.
American courts in the 21st century are upholding the separate but equal doctrine in a way that says to employers, you know what, you can tell a Sikh or a Muslim to work in the back room where they can't be seen by the public in the name of a corporate image policy.
A conversation about discrimination and profiling. But first, these news headlines. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat. International news in Oklahoma this week as state lawmakers are holding an anti-war rally on the south steps of the Oklahoma State Capitol tonight at 7 o'clock. Rebecca, they're upset about the fact that the United States is becoming more involved in the war in Syria.
We're giving these rebels millions of dollars. We're giving them arms, and we're giving them ammunition, and we're giving them political support. I think that's a grave error. We're hoping that this rally will kind of draw a line in the sand and at least tell the national leaders, whom seem to be very mute on this subject, by the way, we want them to know here in the heartland in Oklahoma City that we're opposed to getting our government even more involved.
Well, I think it's important to point out that this is a group of legislators, somewhat small group, but it's a bipartisan group of legislators. So we have Republicans and Democrats coming together to kind of lead this protest this evening. And you raise an interesting question, one that we have talked about on this program. This really is a dilemma, one that we have been struggling with. You know, we have these humanitarian issues. You and I have personally seen them, having gone to the Syrian refugee camp there in Jordan. And, you know, people are really, really suffering. We have, I think the latest estimate was about 100,000 people that have died and over a million that are refugees. So it is this question, a moral obligation perhaps to help save human lives. But on the other hand, are we willing to send, well, right now it's simply weapons, but potentially could escalate into soldiers, American lives, to go and protect these individuals. And so that's the question that we are struggling with as a country. And certainly these legislators have contemplated that and taking action.
Well, their concern is not only that, you know, Syrian lives apparently are not necessarily our business, but the fact that Russians and Iranians are supporting the Syrian government, and that this basically comes down to a proxy war between the United States and its allies, presumably, and the Russians and the Iranians. So, you know, we've got this, as you mentioned, major dilemma. Is it national security, state security? Do we really want to become embroiled in a war that we perhaps can't even solve, given our recent past with Iraq and Afghanistan, but that we become then embroiled in an international interaction that involves other great powers with whom we don't have very friendly relations?
If we become part of this civil war, it will undermine our position later on as the United States tries to take a leadership role in assisting the Syrian people in building democratic institutions that we enjoy here in the United States.
So what, you know, what do you do in this case? Do you go for the human security or do you go for the state security? It is a dilemma.
Well, and I'm not sure that there's an answer there. I think proxy war is I know that that's the terminology that's being used, but I think that that's perhaps not the correct terminology. But yes, Iran, Russia, countries that we have issues with, we seem to be going against them. I think the larger issue is really in your wheelhouse, the issue of supplying these rebels with weapons that we don't know where those weapons will go, how they'll be used, where they might proliferate to. And so that's a serious concern as well.
Well, we absolutely can't monitor that at all, even though this isn't necessarily part of their explicit anti-war rally here in Oklahoma. But certainly it raises all kinds of political and security questions when you start to supply arms to rebels that are not unified, when you start to supply arms to those who can send them who knows where. here and where they'll end up next and what kind of wars we're going to end up having to get involved in the future. So I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons to be speaking out. But what's really interesting is that Oklahomans are speaking out on this issue, or at least these few legislators are. It's not something that we've done for a long time in this country. There haven't been a lot of active anti-war rallies. Their purpose is to raise awareness about this single issue, they say, and that they're united and that they hope that this will spread and that other Americans will come and support them. But on the other hand, American public opinion would suggest that there's more support now in light of the chemical weapons, right?
Yeah, the evidence, this red line that's been crossed, does change some opinions and certainly does change the situation. But I do think it's notable, again, that this is a bipartisan group and that they are going and participating in civic engagement. We like to see that sort of thing.
Well, I will certainly be watching this evening to see what happens at the Oklahoma State Capitol. So thank you very much, Rebecca, for sharing your insight about this issue.
Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment for me or any of our panelists, send us a tweet at WorldviewsKGOU. You can also email us at worldviews@ou.edu. Coming up, I'll talk with the Director of Law and Policy for the Sikh Coalition. Rajdeep Singh's organization lobbied against a 2009 bill in the Oklahoma House that would have prohibited headscarves, turbans, and other coverings in official driver's license photos. I'm Suzette Rolat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Rolat. Nearly a year ago, a white supremacist killed 6 people and wounded 4 others at a Sikh temple in the Milwaukee suburb of Oak Creek. The August 5, 2012 attack in Wisconsin was one of several incidents in the past decade against members of the South Asian religion. Our guest today is Rajdeep Singh, the Director of Law and Policy for the New York City-based Sikh Coalition. Members of the Queens, New York Sikh community founded the organization shortly after a group of teenagers carried out a brutal revenge attack against a man they incorrectly thought was a Muslim on the night of September 11, 2001. Rajdeep Singh, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you for having me.
So as I understand it, the Sikh religion is the 5th largest religion in the world with some 25 million followers. Is that correct? But for our listeners who may not be familiar with the religion, can you speak a little bit about the faith and its practitioners and what part of the world you find the religion predominantly?
Yes. The Sikh religion was founded over 500 years ago in the Punjab region of South Asia by Guru Nanak. And it was developed over the course of about 2 centuries by 10 gurus who lived between 1469 and 1708. The main sort of pillars of the Sikh religion are that there is one God and that all human beings are created equal, regardless of their race, religion, and gender.
So in terms of your work, you work as an advocate for Sikh civil rights in the United States, actually. So what are the challenges that you see? I mean, what are some of the issues of religious freedom, religious liberty? What are some of the concerns that you deal with as an advocate for the religion?
Yes, the Sikh Coalition, which is the organization that I work for, is the largest Sikh American civil rights organization in the United States. We were founded in the days after the 9/11 attacks in the context of a torrent of hate crimes and other discrimination incidents involving Sikhs. Unfortunately, in the post-9/11 environment, the prevailing stereotype is that if somebody wears a turban, they're affiliated with al-Qaeda. And I think this has explained a lot of the violence and bigotry that is too often directed at Sikhs.
So what are some of the things that you do specifically then to advocate for the religion? I mean, are you working through the court system? Is it public relations? Is it a little bit of everything? What are some of the things that you do?
We take an interdisciplinary approach. We have a litigation program, so we do often have occasion to file suit in courts to vindicate civil rights of people who've experienced job discrimination, for example. We pursue legislative advocacy in Congress and develop relationships with government agencies at the federal, state, local levels to address problems like school bullying and hate crimes and racial and religious profiling. We also do a lot of education work. And so we go into public schools and try to promote diversity appreciation programs in the context of anti-bullying efforts and so forth.
Do you feel that this advocacy is working? I mean, you mentioned that this was largely in response after 9/11, where, as you said, those who would be seen out in public with a turban would be discriminated against. There's a tremendous amount of bias, stereotyping. We don't tend to think of the things that then follow: job discrimination, as you mentioned, profiling, on the streets and a daily life. So do you think some of this work that you're doing, the educational campaigns, the awareness, working through the court system, are you seeing an improvement in the public's response to the Sikh religion?
We've seen some slow improvement, and we've made some steady but substantial progress in the area of expanding civil rights through the courts and also the legislative process. So, for example, in California last year, we spearheaded the passage of a bill called AB 1964, which provides workers in California with the nation's strongest protections against religious discrimination. On the other hand, there have been setbacks. As you know, last August in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, six Sikhs were massacred at a Sikh Gurdwara or place of worship. And it was one of the most lethal attacks on an American place of worship since the 1963 bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. So we've made some gains, but at the same time, there have been setbacks. And many of the problems that we faced in the immediate aftermath of the 9/11 attacks haven't abated.
Is this something that you face that largely in the United States, or is this a global phenomenon? Are you working at all to address some of these religious freedom issues around the world?
The Sikh Coalition currently focuses almost exclusively on domestic civil rights issues, but Sikhs throughout the world have faced and continue to face human rights challenges. For example, in France, Sikhs are not permitted to wear their turbans, which are religiously required, in the public schools. And so Sikh parents are not permitted to send their kids to French public schools, which is problematic for a variety of reasons. It sort of cuts against integration of Sikhs into French society.
This is true in France of other things as well, the hijab, other things, other religious articles that are banned from that. So your coalition then works to do what in that case?
Well, in 2004, when the ban was imposed on various religious communities in France, the Sikh Coalition did persuade several dozen members of Congress to speak out and write to the government of France and repudiate them for doing this. But unfortunately, a lot of those problems are still festering. Sikhs have faced human rights challenges in India as well in the last two or three decades. A lot of those underlying challenges haven't been addressed. But during the 80s and 90s in particular, there were very serious, severe human rights violations implicating Sikhs, which are well documented by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and so forth.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Rajdeep Singh, the Director of Law and Policy for the civil rights organization, the Sikh Coalition. We'll talk more right after a break. I'm Suzette Gralat, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. I'm Suzette Gralat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. My guest is Rajdeep Singh, a civil rights attorney with the New York-based Sikh Coalition. When we left off, he described some of the human rights challenges Sikhs face in France and India. So given that your focus is on religious freedom, I mean, you are working for a coalition that's focusing on the Sikh religion, but have you found allies in terms of working with other religious groups or other advocacy groups that are also working on issues of religious freedom and liberty?
Yes, we have found allies, and we believe that interfaith coalition building is an integral part of our work. I mean, there's strength in numbers. Given that the Sikh population in the United States may be no more than 500,000, we absolutely need to work with other communities, not just within the interfaith community, but outside as well. And so in the context of bullying, for example, school bullying, we've partnered very strongly with the LGBT community on efforts to pass more robust laws and regulations against school bullying.
So just working with other groups to share lessons or learn lessons about prejudice and hatred and try to prevent these types of activities, regardless of whether it's religion or sexual orientation or whatever. I mean, these are the kinds of groups that you're looking to work.
Yeah, and we regard ourselves as a civil rights organization. And our mission, Our organizational mission is to promote and protect human and civil rights for all people, regardless of who they are. And essentially what we're trying to do is vindicate the right of people to be who they are, regardless of their background.
And yet we live in a society where we have civil rights legislation. We have, at least we like to think that we have a fairly open-minded society in this regard, and we still have work to do. I mean, it sounds like you're still seeing that we have freedoms and liberties that need to be protected when it comes to civil rights.
And it's important also to note that the legislation that we have is laden with loopholes. I'll give you one example. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which governs workplace discrimination, has been misinterpreted, in our view, in recent years, in ways that allow employers to segregate visibly religious employees like Sikhs and Muslims and observant Jews from customers in the name of corporate image. So essentially what you have is a situation where American courts in the 21st century are upholding, in a way, the separate but equal doctrine, in a way that says to employers, you know what, you can tell a Sikh or a Muslim to work in the basement or in the back room where they can't be seen by the public in the name of a corporate image policy. And that's allowed, according to some courts, by Title VII, which is part of the seminal civil rights legislation of 1964. So yes, we do have good civil rights legislation at the federal, state, local levels, but there are loopholes that need to be plugged. And that's where we spend a lot of time doing our work.
Through the judicial system primarily? I mean, are these kinds of cases that you're bringing up before appeals courts? Or, I mean, have you had anything actually addressed at this level at the Supreme Court perhaps?
We've so far operated mostly in the context of the legislatures. I mean, we find it's much more efficient and cost effective to sort of close loopholes by passing laws in the first instance rather than having to litigate things out over the course of years, which could be a very costly process. We have filed suit on behalf of a number of Sikhs in the context mostly of job discrimination. We also had a client who had experienced school bullying, which was persistent and which wasn't being remedied by the relevant school. But for the most part, we focus our efforts on passing laws in legislatures that are more protective of civil rights than the status quo.
So are you doing this state by state? Because I noticed that you worked successfully to pass, and you mentioned the California law, but you've also worked in Oregon and other places where you've had some changes in civil rights legislation there. Are you largely doing this at the state level, or are you working at all at the national Congress? I mean, I'm curious because, you know, we have this certain perception of the U.S. Congress, and so is this something that is really, you know, you have ears in Congress that are really listening to these kinds of issues today?
Yeah, it's we operate on all fronts. So we do pursue legislative advocacy at the state and local levels, but also in Congress. Things tend to move glacially anyway in Congress, but it's important always to maintain and sustain those relationships because when you achieve sort of a critical mass, it is possible then to pass federal legislation, and that obviously would create a benchmark for the entire country. I should tell you a little bit about some of the work that we've done at the state level. In 2009, we did some work in Oklahoma. There was a bill introduced at that time which would have prohibited individuals from wearing religious head coverings in driver's license photos. It passed out of the House of Representatives in Oklahoma at the time by a vote of 88-8. But the problem was that it was motivated, in our view, substantially by anti-Muslim bias, and it was designed to prevent Muslims from wearing headscarves, head coverings in driver's license photos. Now, for Sikhs who are religiously required to wear turbans and observant Jews who are religiously required to wear head coverings, this poses obvious problems. And so fortunately, we were able to stop that bill from progressing. But a lot of our work is in the nature of prevention. It's not just a matter of passing new laws which expand civil rights. Sometimes we're fighting to hold on to what we've got.
Right, to keep new laws from being passed that would be restrictive. So along those lines, here in Oklahoma, I'm sure you're probably aware there was a law passed not too long ago about Sharia law. Again, focused on a particular religion. And so similar to the one that you prevented from coming through, this is one that
And we're that confident that that law it. Will be, if it hasn't already been struck down as unconstitutional. And I should also note that we really do underscore the importance of interfaith coalition building. We're always very eager to sort of stand up for the rights of our brothers and sisters in the Muslim American community and all communities, frankly, because if the civil rights, the human rights of one community are compromised, then all of us lose. So all of us have a stake in making sure that we preserve the integrity of our civil rights laws and also expand the scope of protections which are afforded to people in this country.
But beyond this country, though, I mean, this approach that you're taking, the legislative process, really focusing. I mean, it sounds like you're kind of covering your bases in the sense that you're fighting this fight at all angles, but that you're working largely through the legislative process. Is this a strategy that you can use around the world? I mean, in France, for example, you mentioned the head coverings in France and laws about public school there. I mean, do you work through the legislative process in France, or what about India? You mentioned India as well. I mean, is this something that you can translate from one country to another?
It is something that can be translated from one country to another, but it's very important to focus on the United States and making sure that we as a nation have the most robust civil rights and human rights protections anywhere in the world.
The U.S. sets the example. Is this what
exactly.
You're saying? That the U.S. sets the example for the rest of the world to
this
follow?
This is benchmarking.
Basically.
This is benchmarking. And if we can serve as role models for the rest of the world by having the most rights-protective laws anywhere in the world— that will have, I think, positive ripple effects on the rest of the world and at the very least give us some leverage when we pursue advocacy in other countries. And we could point to the United States and say, look, here you have an example of a pluralistic society which promotes and protects religious freedom for all people and which is functional. And that's what we're striving for in this country. But it is not something we could take for granted. As you pointed out, there have been some bigoted laws passed in this country targeted at Muslims. Sikhs have been subjected to violence and discrimination, stereotyping even by policymakers. And so charity begins at home. And so we have to sort of shore up the home front. But I could tell you that the U.S. Constitution, our sort of constitutional heritage, the Bill of Rights, I mean, they're very resilient things, very durable and very adaptable. And I'm very proud that Sikh Americans can champion the cause of civil rights on behalf of other people. It's very much one of these only in America sort of phenomena. It's really a beautiful thing. And I'm confident that we'll continue to make progress in this country. At the same time, I think it's very important for all of us to realize that we cannot take any of our civil rights for granted, that we always have to be vigilant and make sure that we preserve and protect the integrity of our Constitution.
Well, Rajdeep Singh, thank you so much for joining us on Worldviews today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to my conversation with Rajdeep Singh, the Director of Law and Policy for the Sikh Coalition. You can read more about the organization's work in Oklahoma by visiting the Worldviews page of our website, kgou.org. The University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies and KGOU produce Worldviews through a collaborative partnership. Brian Hardzinski engineers and edits the program, Mackenzie Samus prepared our background research for this interview, and our digital content intern for this summer is Holly Arias. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Grolot.